Okay, we'll assume it's currently in work, okay? There's two of them, and they're acting as five, all five. They're up for it, let's say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. All right, Lisa, are you ready for this?
Cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that this is like
this. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Oh, good evening. This is the frisson of excitement courses through my body, the 400th edition of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced, UFOs, unidentified flying objects. There are many researchers and investigators around the world who've dedicated their lives in an attempt to solve these mysteries. All of them work tirelessly, most of them unknown, unrecognized, and unrewarded. And this program, Strange Days Indeed, gives them a public voice and you the opportunity to expand your mind. And we also hope that we stir those who apparently do have some answers, but for whatever reasons maintain a deafening silence, and others who could know, but prefer, for whatever the reason, to ignore UFOs. To you who've been with us for these 400 programs via News Talk 1010 CFRB here in Toronto, to you tuned to Montreal's News Talk leaders, CJAD 800, and you who listen around the planet via the web and the podcast, welcome, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day, and welcome to edition 400 of Strange Days Indeed. Thank you, Julian McNabb, driving us here in Toronto, driving CJAD 800 in Montreal. Jim Pacheco, and I think Jim has been with us since the very first night that CJAD picked us up. In studio with me tonight, Dave Furlott. Evening.
Good evening.
Former co-host Michael J. Woods.
Good evening.
Now let's turn your mic on. That's good. Mic.
Oh, do we really have to?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's not like television. We don't have, you know, there's nobody in the sound booth. Well, I mean...
Yes, there is.
Julian's just out there, but he's busy doing other things.
And I was busy here sleeping, looking at all the pretty lights on the control panel.
Yeah,
ooh, look at it.
And do you like the Dutchie and the two chocolate donuts in the
400? Anniversary pastry tray. You have to admire that. You know?
Thank you, Julian.
Once again, you know.
I think it's probably illegal, though, if we actually light the candles.
Yeah.
Well, Toronto is a non-smoking universe,
that's
so, you know.
True.
And we don't want to spoil the nice new ceiling in the studio here. Also in studio and looking longingly at the two chocolate-covered donuts and the Dutchie, Wayne St. John.
That in my mind, actually.
Yeah, there's four of us and three donuts.
We've got to surround it anyway.
We'll draw straws for the candles. That's what we'll do. Also joining us tonight via the phones, our British correspondent Stuart Miller, the publisher of UFO Review, East Coast correspondent Don Ledger, and probably Wendy Connors, too.
All right.
She's feeling it a little bit. And she'll join us for a couple of minutes tonight. So it's going to be a kind of old folks from home week, it feels like.
Careful. That old folks stuff.
Yeah.
You're in range, you know.
Yeah, I know. There are a few names that I need to mention, too, on the 400th edition of this program. People who have in the past contributed to this program and who, for one reason or another, are not with us tonight. Abductee activist John Velez, who now works Saturday nights. Scott Robbins, who was a major part of Strange Days Indeed before it actually came into being as a radio program. He's my partner. We put all this together.
Hello, Scott.
He's down there in Puerto Vallarta.
No good for him.
You know, copying a suntan on his bleach white body.
Yes, well, I imagine it's not quite so bleached these days.
Probably not.
No.
And happily married now, too.
Oh, excellent.
Bobby Rowley, Ian Rogers, and the ever-lovely Chris Ball, who's done so much to keep both the virtuallystrange.net website and UFO updates email list running over the years. And there's also Bubba in Carolina. I love Bubba and his emails. And Will Wise on the Eastern Seaboard, who've helped muchly with the audio archive and the podcasts. And there's one name that I've still not mentioned yet, and that's Victor Vigiani. Victor Vigiani and I love working together on this program. We covered most of the bases that needed to be done on the program and spent a good deal of time together outside of these four walls, too. So it's a great loss that Victor and I haven't spent any time together recently, and I know a lot of you have been wondering about this. And it's even greater a shame that he left the studio rather than discuss Dave Frelott's take on Stephen Greer 4 days before Greer was scheduled to speak here in Toronto. And this program has tried really hard to present both the good and the ugly that is the modern version of ufology, much the same as it always has been. Much of the field is good, but there's a darker side to it, and a side that really doesn't get it and gets in the way of progress as far as getting those who could help resolving what is probably the greatest mystery that humanity is likely to face handled. And when Victor told me he was bringing Stephen Greer to Toronto, I was somewhat concerned, but didn't interfere when Victor plugged that gathering here on the program. Nor did I interfere when Dave Frelott told me before we went on air that night that Victor wasn't going to like what his take on it was. And I'd have been happy to let Victor and Dave slug it out live on air, but Victor chose to walk out in the middle of Dave's take. And that was the end of Victor's involvement with this program, and it seems our friendship, too. So this program misses him a lot. Listeners do, too, and so do I. And it's really unfortunate that it went down. But that, too, is life.
I should also mention that I also miss him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we all miss him.
Okay.
Yeah.
No question about that.
Friends
are allowed to disagree.
Yeah.
Last time I checked. It was in the book.
But anyway, let us move on.
It moves on.
As Victor seems to have done.
400 episodes. And I'm the hard-headed, hard news guy about 23 years in this business. Told me you could run a radio program in Toronto for 400 episodes, which, just to give you an idea, that's 4 months shy of 8 years of programming. Well, I'd have laughed in your face. There's no way it would have flown.
You would have said.
I would have laughed in your face. And then 8 years later, I would have been eating my words because here we are.
Well, I didn't think we'd last a few months, you know, the way things were going. Are you down in Mexico, Robbins? Are you there?
I am here.
You are in Puerto Vallarta, right?
You know what you are? You are physic.
Scott, how are you doing?
About 30 seconds before you mentioned me on the air,
yes.
I was in the living room here, and I'm by the computer, and I said, oh, let's get on the net here and see what Errol's doing. I haven't listened to him in ages. I haven't talked to him in ages. I dial you in,
yes.
Get you up on the speakers. My wife walks in and says, hey, this is Errol. Let's have a listen. And 2 seconds later, you said my name. So,
I'm all goosebumps. You're both psychics.
It's Strange Days indeed. Yeah, we were mocking you. Did you hear?
Oh, I know. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
You were with such a good mock. It was wonderful. Scott Robbins on the phone with us. It's magic tonight. It's program 400, Scott. That's what it is.
Yes, I heard that, and congratulations.
Thank you.
You've been working hard and working long, and you've reached a lot of people. There's no question about that.
And you know, the air conditioning still doesn't work here in the weekend on the summer.
Well, turn it on for the important people.
Yeah,
turn it off for the others.
Before Wallachin comes in here on a Monday morning, about 3 o'clock, they crank it up high. Hey, it's good to talk with you.
It's good to talk with you also.
Mike Woods is here. Dave Frelott is here. And
hey, Mike.
Scott, how are you keeping? And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Happily married for a little over a year now.
Oh, way to go. Way to go. Well, I can tell you I'm about, what is that now? I'm 22 days away from my 23rd anniversary. So.
Wow.
Ooh, this is UFO talk, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Because this is an alien life form we're talking about here. Yes. The wife.
Program 400 in the current series tonight. And kind of special occasion. Wayne St. John in studio with me. Dave Ferlot, Mike Woods, and on the line from down there in Mexico, the man who helped put this program together way back when in the dark ages before everything went digital. Scott Robbins is with us. Have you seen any UFOs down there, Scott?
I have not, but my fingers are still bleeding from cutting tape.
Permanently scarred fingers. Yeah.
Actually, in Mexico, here in Puerto Vallarta, there is lots of talk of it. And it seems, I was thinking of you the last few weeks because it seems like there is more talk of it. And I haven't had specific reports of sightings or any goings on, as it were. But just I'm overhearing more talk of it. And maybe it's because of this whole, North Korea thing and Iran thing and a defense shield that apparently was just literally turned on a day or two ago. And most people, I think, didn't even know there was anything out there, let alone something that was capable of being turned on. But something's been turned on. And so there's, I guess, maybe a shift back now with all these little challenges we're facing to, okay, what have we learned? What technology do we have? What's being worked at secretly? Where did that technological know-how come from? And it all kind of gets back to, Area 51 and secret building of ships that we don't know about yet, but we know this stealth has been with us for a long time, so there's got to be something in the air that's 10 or 15 years advanced beyond that we haven't seen yet. And it gets you thinking and gets you talking, I guess, and that's sort of what I'm thinking might be happening.
Are you watching Jaime Maussan's equivalent version of 60 Minutes down there?
No, I have not.
Ah, because apparently we've had Jaime on here several times, and he's first of all an investigative journalist down there in Mexico, and then also the man that has become the high-profile Mexican UFO researcher in the last few years.
Okay, great.
You know, he covers it a lot down there, and the big hot one, certainly in the English-speaking world anyway, was the Mexican Air Force's infrared video footage, the drug interdiction flight that caught 9 or 11 objects that was surrounding their aircraft.
Right.
Yeah, turn your mics on, guys, if you can.
There we go. Yeah, we keep remembering that. I was just wondering, from our Frostback perspective way up here, I was wondering if perhaps, because the Mexican military had been very upfront about that sighting, releasing the video to research, I was just wondering if perhaps people were more willing to talk openly down there as a cultural approach to it. Just that much more willing to talk about it than we are up here?
Possibly.
I think so.
I think generally speaking, and I've only been here, getting on to 3 years now, but generally speaking, the cultural difference in that sense, I know what you're alluding to, we tend to be much more cynical. We've heard enough. We've made a decision. Maybe we're not quite so willing to listen or talk about it. I think there's a little bit more openness down here. And, of course, Mexico has a fascinating history. I mean, years ago, remember the interference with that big air show over Mexico City?
Yes,
amen. The 91 sightings.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think perhaps you're right. You're on track there in terms of a willingness or an openness. I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah, up here these days it seems that if you're not in agreement, then, geez, we just can't talk to you. We'll tolerate anything except a conflicting opinion. So, and it seems to be getting worse.
All right. Let's head across the pond once a month, first Tuesday of the month. The publisher of UFO Review joins us, Stuart Miller. Good evening, Stuart.
And a very good evening to you, Errol, and congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, hold the applause to the end.
Actually, isn't it more appropriately good morning for you?
I'm afraid it is.
Yes,
very good.
I not only have to yet go to bed, but I have to get up 4 hours later.
Oh, really?
Ooh. I do trust you have your tea.
As it happens, I do.
Okay.
A nice hot cup of tea just to keep me awake.
We have all been, I'm sure you've been listening, because our egos wouldn't let us feel any other way.
No, I have been listening right from the get-go. I wish I could be with you down there. It sounds like you're having a party.
We are.
Oh.
And this magnificent 400th cake that Julian put together from the donut shop across the street is just creative genius.
And it actually reads 400. Done with a duchy and two donuts.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you decided yet how you are going to divide the donuts up? And can I add as well that Scott and myself would also like a... bit.
Well, we could save you a candle and put them in the mail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good candles.
They're
nice
candles.
Blue and white.
Oh, that's right. You probably can't mail candles. They're a flammable object. You know, because you could take a birthday candle, commandeer an aircraft, and goodness knows where that might lead.
Yes. Yeah, and that's probably more damage than you can do with a nail clipper.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Put down the nail clippers. What? Stand back, or someone's getting a bad pedicure. And that can kill you.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Okay. That was good about UFOs.
Yes. Stuart, much going on in your neck of the woods, ufologically speaking, or are you just laying back for the summer?
I think we've... we've broadly laid back for the summer. But, I mean, I have to say at this moment, Errol, I am conflicted with emotions. I am both elated and dejected.
Oh.
I'm elated because everything that we've been waiting for has happened, except that nobody seems to have paid any attention to it. Apparently, SETI has had a signal from an extraterrestrial source.
Hello?
I know where you're going.
You do?
Well, okay.
What do you mean where I'm going? It doesn't matter where I'm going. Listen, they've either had a signal or they haven't had a signal.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, I'm sitting here with the look on my face because I don't know what the heck you're talking about. So would you go a little further there, Stuart?
Certainly. A doctor who is well known within ufological circles, by the name of Mr. Greer, has announced that SETI has received multiple extraterrestrial signals. Look, I'm sorry, I don't see what's so funny about the fact that ET's contacted.
No, I'm sitting here giggling, and there are three heads laid on the desk, wrapping themselves with knuckles.
Stuff up, would he?
No, definitely not Steve. He'd never make anything up.
Not the man who beams down UFOs with big powerful flashlights close to airports. No.
There is one thing that puzzles me about this. He says, we have confirmation, and I'm not going to give the name yet because we are trying to coax this guy out of the closet.
Hmm.
Oh, yes, well, coax him out of the closet.
He probably doesn't want to out himself.
Okay.
I saw that story. I think you had given me the lead on it, and I went and read it, and I thought... Oh, I can't be bothered. This is just ludicrous. Let's wait and see, you know, if he in fact has someone who has actually told him that and will step forward and say, yes, I told Stephen Greer that, then well and good, we'll climb on it on the list. And until then, not.
Fair enough, Errol.
Okay. So what has dejected you, Stuart Miller?
What has dejected me, I'm afraid, has been the case of Gary McKinnon.
Oh, yes, the UFO hacker.
The
man who hacked into highly classified yet astoundingly vulnerable United States government computers.
I have a word of chastisement for my friend, Paul Kimball, and his what I consider to be heartless comments on UFO updates today about the case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody knows this, but there is actually at the moment an imbalance in the extradition laws between America and the UK. Apparently the two countries agreed a new extradition act some time ago. The UK has implemented it. America hasn't, which means that it is far, far easier to extradite somebody from the United Kingdom to the United States than it is the other way around. If McKinnon was an American, it would take 3, 4, maybe even longer years under present legislation to get him back over here.
I just want to explain for the listeners who have no idea who Gary McKinnon is, an English guy who spent many hours cruising, as I said earlier, top secret installations, top secret computer networks in the United States. And allegedly, he claims, and he was on a dial-up connection, so the image took a long time to come in, but he saw a startling image of a flying disc, which he has described in some detail. And the United States government claims that Gary McKinnon did hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage to computer systems. At least $3,000 worth of damage to each computer that he was into. And if you know anything about computer security, you'll understand that the security people in those United States government facilities are just dimwits.
They've got some splaining to do.
They certainly do, because Gary McKinnon to get in there that easily is ridiculous. Okay. No,
they're not doing any splaining. They're busy sweeping the floors now.
Yeah, that's good.
So, Stuart Miller, having filled in some of the stuff that needs to be filled in, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, what is very interesting is that simultaneously, in McKinnon's case is riding on the back of this, there is another case of a non-ufological nature. It's actually tied into the Enron case, of three bankers who worked for the National Westminster Bank in the UK and who are alleged to have committed a fraud in relation to the Enron situation, and they too are going through the same process in a much more public manner than McKinnon is in the UK, and are attracting a lot of sympathy and a lot of support. And it's like coming to crunch time for these guys. They've just had their appeal knocked back, and possibly on a plane on Thursday. I do wonder if Americans, and I know that Paul Kimball is not an American, I know he's very, very much a Canadian, but I wonder if Americans understand or realize how their legal system is viewed externally. If I had committed a crime in Canada or anywhere else in Europe and had rushed back to the UK and extradition proceedings were launched against me, I wouldn't want to go, but I wouldn't be kicking up an immense fuss, because I would have faith in the legal systems of those countries. If I had committed a crime in America, I would be doing exactly what Gary McKinnon is doing, which is filling my boots. American justice is seen as eccentric and profoundly, profoundly excessive and just utterly ridiculous, frankly. And, I mean, nobody's suggesting, although the death penalty has been mentioned in relation to McKinnon's case, nobody's suggesting for one moment he's going to end up in the electric chair. But he could go away for an appalling length of time. For what? For a crime, in inverted commas, in the UK that wouldn't even get a conviction. His life would be made a misery for a year or two by the intelligence services. He'd be given a very severe slap on the wrist, and that would be it. But he's possibly facing 20 years or whatever, you know, if convicted in the...
Yeah, and
that's ludicrous.
And he could end up in Gitmo, couldn't he?
Well, technically,
he's a terrorist. Yes, he's a terrorist.
Yes, he could, and it's
and be held there without trial, and spend more than 20 years if Bush had his way with the people that are down there. Krista Henriksen, who recently earned her master's degree in anthropology from Simon Fraser University, and her thesis, Alien Encounters, a Close Analysis of Personal Accounts of Extraterrestrial Experiences. That's an odd thing to write a thesis on, isn't it?
Well, not really. In anthropology, we're interested in all kinds of human experience. And I'm particularly interested in process belief and the process of making meaning out of experience. One of the ways to do that is to look at a particular example. In my case, I chose an experience that is often considered outside a rational experience. That's an encounter with an extraterrestrial, mm-hmm. an abduction or another kind of encounter.
It's a breakthrough into academia. They gave this kid a doctorate for her paper on UFO abduction accounts.
Strange days indeed on News Talk 1010 CFRB in Toronto and Montreal's News Talk leader CJAD 800. Talk to Errol Bruce now. Call 1-866-866-7387.
I gave this kid a PhD. Velez, I love John Velez.
I love his take on things.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, Krista Hendrickson got herself a PhD a few years ago, and she was on the program too.
That thesis that you just we just heard there,
yes,
was interesting because, I mean, it is a great reminder for those who kind of have a half or a quarter ear to this. I might be a little frustrated in terms of information and availability to facts, that there are some great sources of information out there, and credible people have written great articles, and it's not always just a case of reading but never getting a straight answer, or hearing or watching on TV, mm-hmm, but never getting a real conclusion. There's great stuff out there to be read, and you don't have to end up in Guantanamo Bay to get it necessarily, but there's great people out there making great efforts to actually bring facts and substantiated updates, information to the table.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah, I've been working on a little side project the last week or two, and I was at Cohen UFO, Jerry Cohen's website, and that's spelled C-O-H-E-N, CohenUFO.com. And what an amazing website that is. I hadn't been there since we had Jerry on the program a few years ago. And the stuff that's there, well, if you work in the field, you know about, but you forget about, because there's just so many other things going on. The constant resurrection of old cases, for instance. Oh, man. Yes. And there have been a couple of people talking about that, Stuart Miller.
They have. Are you insinuating something here?
No, not at all. No, no, no.
Stuart, you missed your cue.
Well, clearly, I haven't been given the script.
Well, that's good, because there isn't one.
There isn't one tonight. I mean, we're just flying by the seat of our pants. No, there have been a few comments over the last weeks to me, either on the phone or by email, about the amount of time that's wasted resurrecting things like the Heflin photographs.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, when Richard Hall has come out and said, NICAP did this with it, this with them, and this with them, and this with them, and therefore there's nothing else to say. You know, all the work could have possibly been done has been done, and yet there are people who insist on spending hours and hours and hours discussing it, and here I am talking about it on the radio now.
No, I think there's a lot of merit in looking back at old cases, to be honest. Simply because you know, a new generation of ufologists, it's different minds coming to it, and they, not for one moment would I dared to cast aspersions on the NICAP investigators who I know were very thorough. But you just never know, you know, it's somebody might spot something that somebody has. You just can't rule that out.
And on the other hand, I'd really prefer if those new and fresh minds were concentrating on new and fresh cases so we can advance what we already know rather than, you know, walk the same trail again.
There you go.
I mean, we can get into pelicanitis though. Forever if we want.
Yeah, I think the trouble with modern cases is that there's just too many of them, and none of them actually get properly investigated. You know, never mind all this rubbish we read in the papers about how UFO sightings are down. UFO sightings are up, and continuously up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's just too many, and people haven't got the resources or the time. There aren't enough people to look at them properly.
So
it is easy to go back to look at old cases, but at the same time, I think it's perfectly valid.
We also have the whole harm factor.
Dave Furlot just said...
I was going to get that in
there. Yeah, we also have the ho-hum factor.
The ho-hum factor, which means that we got all of these new cases, the reported sightings, and everybody's just going, yeah, of course. Okay, next. You know, like you said, they're not being investigated because of that factor.
So Robbins was going to get something in there, too.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, given that fact that there is this ho-hum factor, of course, my question would be, has there been any significant development recently in way of technology or know-how to investigate new cases or also go back and reinvestigate the old cases? I mean, you know, similar to the DNA reality of criminal cases today, new technology, new methods send us back to relook, and perhaps new technology and new methods might be helping us or should be helping us look at some of the newest sightings. Is that something that's happening, or are we still stuck with the same people using the same techniques and same methods and same technology trying to solve this riddle?
That's exactly the way it is, Scott Robbins.
I don't know. I think I would say that the biggest change in the last 20 years in the field is the simple fact that we have computers. We have the software to look at the images, and I think that's a key change for the positive in the field.
And there we must leave this portion of the discussion. Stuart Miller, thank you, sir. Stephen Greer.
Listen, he says it's happened.
And you stayed up this late to tell us that?
We are going to get you for that.
Good night. We shall talk to you again soon, Stuart, in a few weeks. Good night. Mike Woods, Dave Furlott, Wayne St. John, and on the line on his internet-connected all-you-can-eat long-distance, Scott Robbins, who was co-founder of this program. Co-creator, I guess, is the word. Many years ago.
Easy now.
All right, many years ago.
Dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Yeah. Are you starting to feel your age? Is that what it is, Robbins?
No, not at all. I'm as youthful as ever, you know that.
Yes, I know, yes. Yeah.
He witnessed the asteroid.
It's since he got rid of the Harley. That's what's made me wonder, you know.
Oh, no, I didn't need to hear that.
Well, it was a challenge, you know. Cobblestones and speed bumps and just bad roads down here don't make for much in way of motorcycle riding. I thought I'd take less of a chance on my life and lose the toy.
It sounds like a discretion being the better part of valor decision there, Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, continuing our international flavor tonight, let's head down to the interesting country of New Mexico, where all kinds of strangeness has happened there. Down in New Mexico, we go down to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the woman who created and continues to create faded discs, the audio archivist of the field of ufology, Wendy Connors, lives down there. And Wendy, amazingly enough, is feeling just a little better and can join us on the program tonight. Good evening, Wendy.
Hey, Errol. How are you there?
Oh, feeling good.
Oh, good.
Feeling good and wearing a smug, self-satisfied grin, too.
Well, I wanted to tell you, congratulations on reaching 400 shows.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Yeah. You are the Don Imus of ufology.
Yeah, but he's much uglier than I am.
Could be worse. She could have called you the Howard Stern of ufology.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Don's a New Mexican, too. So.
Yeah. Yes, he is. And I think a very strange New Mexican, too. I mean, more strange than any other New Mexicans that I know.
Yeah, he's kind of...
He has his moments.
Cheese is a little off of his cracker. Yeah. A little bit.
that was a good one, Wendy.
From Santa Fe.
His branding iron just isn't quite, you know.
Not quite hot enough?
Not quite hot enough.
Yeah, you got to love these desert expressions. Oh, my. Don Imus, of course, a well-known radio personality, started out as a rock and roll kind of guy and has become... Let's not even go there.
Let's
stop that.
What a pleasure to hear from a person who has made a massively important contribution to ufology. That's
mm-hmm.
Wendy.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Now I'm turning red.
Well, that's true. Well, and because it is true. You have. And without you in the field, there would not be the most amazing collections of MP3 files on CDs of UFO history.
Let's face facts. In this particular field, we seem to spend more time shooting at each other than we do saying well done. Wendy, well done.
Oh, thank mm-hmm. you very much.
Excellent.
I really appreciate that.
Yay. And it's good. It's really good you can join us tonight. Tell us about this clip that you sent me this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. This is, you know, everybody keeps talking about the black triangles and everything. What I'd like to do is to take you all back tonight, like I usually do, in my Wayback Machine, to Bob Gribble's National UFO Reporting Center interviews. to a CIA pilot, who's a Navy pilot, but he's working for the CIA, who encounters a black triangle on December 6, 1977, on a flight coming from Japan. And that. So let's take a listen.
I fly for the CIA. I'm a reconnaissance pilot. I just came from Tokyo. I just landed about 10 minutes ago at the flight level 510. I was out of radar contact, just on my own alone there, but I was still in radio contact, and this thing came up to me, no wings, about double the length of my airplane. I was flying a Phantom F-411, no bottom and no top, all equidistant sides of the triangle, and they weren't sharp, they were sort of rounded off edges, no noise, no wings, no thrust, no windows, nothing which would give it a reason to fly. It was there, it wasn't my imagination. It was a porous material, probably. Well, it looked like sponge rubber, so it looked fine. But it was not metallic. The closest it got was about 70 feet from the wings. Now, I have radar, and it was on radar. It stayed there for about a half an hour. This is at Mach 2.2. The dimensions of the height, I'd say, were 10 feet by 10 feet. Two radar ships, but they were both out of range. And oddly enough, he disappeared right this guy said, well, you'll be in range in about 3 minutes. And about a minute after that, this guy pulled away. I did climb a little bit to see what sort of... I was curious. I climbed it to 60,000 feet. Well, that plane can climb very fast. It's one of the best planes we have. In fact, its actual top speed is classified. But anyway, I gave it full power and put the nose up to 6,000 feet, and this thing kept up with no strain at all. It kept right next to me. And he started to move almost instantly when I did, like he knew I was going to do that. I went up 60,000 feet and sort of stayed there for a little while and put into a dive to see if I could outrun him. He stayed right up with me with no problem at all. And then the guy said, well, you'll be within radar range in about 3 or 4 minutes. And about a minute after that, he pulled away from me, going forward, at least triple the speed, with no effort at all. I mean, no acceleration. He just was there, then he was a speck, and then he was gone. My commanding officer name is Admiral, and he's Chief of Naval Intelligence at the Pentagon. The people at approach control in the Navy, they didn't seem to care. Either it's one of ours or it's somewhere else. But like I said, there's no reason for it to fly. It has no energy coming out of it, no heat, no power source, nothing.
Oh, my. A Navy pilot flying reconnaissance for the CIA, and nobody cares that he saw a flying triangle.
Yep.
A Navy pilot there reporting to Robert Gribble, the founder of the National UFO Reporting Center, which is, of course, run now by Peter Davenport. When was that, Wendy Connors?
This was on December 6th, 1977.
Wow. You have the most astounding stuff in your collection, and really look forward to your coming back and spending a goodly while with us pretty damn soon, Wendy, and thank you for taking the time to join us tonight on our 400th program.
Oh, you're very welcome, and we're going to try for next month. How does that sound?
That sounds really good.
Okay.
You take care of yourself, though, Wendy.
Okay, thank you, guys. Have a good one. Congratulations
night,
again, Errol.
Thank you, Wendy Connors. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, good night.
Good night. We got Wayne St. John in studio. Yeah, he is there, honestly.
I am here.
Dave Frelott and Michael J. Woods. And on the phone with us from Puerto Vallarta is Scott Robbins. As I keep saying and letting you know, this was all part of our dream 9 years ago, going down to Roswell and doing interviews and coming back and starting a radio show. And they gave us a barn and a couple of microphones, and we be in business now.
So Dad said we should put on a show.
Yes, and so we should do a show. Are you still there, Scott?
I am still here. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Okay. Let's head out to the East Coast. We are just leaping around the...
You're banning the globe.
Banning the spobe. Yeah, yep. Exactly what we're doing. Don Ledger joins us. He's our East Coast correspondent. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Errol. Happy 400th.
Thank you, sir. And a happy 400th to you, too.
I get him for that one, Don.
Yeah. Don't let him get away with that one.
Anything interesting you've been working on since last we talked? And we have about 5 minutes.
Got a couple of cases down here. One in particular was a pilot case and took place in 1996. A private pilot flying out of Halifax to Summerside spotted a ball-shaped or sphere-shaped object in chrome in color. He said it reflected the ground and the sky. And what was interesting, it was below him and between him and the ground, so that it wasn't above the horizon. So that eliminates a lot of probabilities. Plus, it was, you know, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a good day anyway. Clear weather. Very interesting sighting. And the pilot's also a police officer. Said the first, as soon as he laid eyes on it, he got a queasy feeling in his stomach. First of all, he didn't like the thing being anywhere close to him. He figured it was anywhere between 2 and 3 miles away, probably 35 to 50 feet in diameter. But I was curious about this feeling he got, you know, the emotional impact. It was him and another two other people in the airplane with him, but one was asleep in the back seat.
Who said you can't get reliable witnesses?
Yeah, another witness with credibility issues.
Yeah, well, this one does. But what impressed me, not only was the sighting, as you know, one of these, for instance, where you could eliminate the sun and the moon and Venus and all the rest, plus it was daytime, was the object that when he turned the aircraft towards it, it sped away from him. He figured probably went a good 15 to 20 miles in the space of a tenth of a second. It was just a tiny dot still below the horizon and sitting there, and then it sped off upwards, you know, and to a higher altitude. But it was the feeling he got, and I said, well, what do you mean by feeling? He says, you know, well, sometimes, you know, you're going into one of these domestic disputes, and you know, those can be really bad for police officers, getting involved in a domestic dispute. And he says, you go in and you get this bad feeling in your stomach that, you know, you don't know how you're going to come out of this thing. Could go bad. And he says, that kind of a sort of, I said, like dread, maybe? He says, yeah, that's it, a feeling of dread. And I said, well, why would you think that? He said, I don't know. Just as soon as I looked at it, that's the feeling I got, he said. And I said, probably because it's just all of a sudden you're... you know, your whole idea of what might be out there, what might not be out there has been changed around, and you've got confirmation. He says, I think that's what it was. I said, some people call it a paradigm shift. And he said, yeah, well, I've heard of that, and I think that's what I had. He said, I have no problem with it now.
Yeah. He went from being skeptical to an experiencer almost, huh?
Right, but a very good one, too. You know, and all the details are there, you know, as a... Brian Veit, you might have saw this. It was in George Fowler's files, and Brian Veit had gotten the first call on it. But Brian was able to get a hold of the pilot, and then I got his phone number and everything. And I do know the fellow.
Brian passed it on to you?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like. I want to get those pilot sightings and I get them.
Absolutely. If any pilots are listening tonight and you've had some strange experiences in the sky, then Don Ledger is the man to get a hold of. If you want to email us, sdi@virtuallystrange.net, we'll pass that on to Don.
Yeah, the private aviation field is one that hasn't been sufficiently explored for witnesses. And, I mean, these are people who are accustomed to seeing objects in the sky. They are not the unfamiliar layman. And, frankly, to have enough moxie to not so much take an airplane up and fly it, but to land one, you know, tends to winnow out the fruitcakes pretty quickly, you know, and finally, actually. You know.
As they say, you know, taking off is optional, landing is a prerequisite.
The one thing I note about your about this case too, and his feelings of unease, Errol knows I was doing UFO research for about 3 years, and then I was up at the Apocalypse Now Armageddon, tired of waiting for it, lodge of mine up in the Timmins area, and I had a very close hand sighting, about a 30-minute one, and for me. Regardless of the visual impact and the unusual factors involved in it, for me, the thing that I remember the most is standing there, looking at this going, and one part of my brain clearly going, gee, I hope this gets closer. And as soon as I thought that, another portion of my brain went, no, I don't. And I actually stepped back at that moment and went, well, now, isn't that an interesting little dichotomy here? Yeah. Mr. UFO investigator doesn't want to get too close to the subject of investigation.
Sometimes I've had witnesses say, you know, let's say, I wish this thing would come, get a little closer, I'd get a better look at it, yeah. And the thing will.
Yeah.
And,
well, it was like that CIA pilot in that last clip there that Wendy played. Mm-hmm. You know, the minute he thought about moving the plane, the thing went with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, Don, just very briefly for tonight, but we will spend more time together real soon on the radio.
Righto.
Thank you, Don.
400 good ones, more good ones, I should say.
Yes, and let's hope we find out before we get 400 more in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Good night, Don Ledger.
Thanks very much. Have a good night.
We had a lot of clips to play for you tonight, and Bubba down there in Carolina put a whole bunch of stuff together. And, you know, the 2 hours is nice and compact. We get in here, we do what we do, go for beer, right? But 3 hours we really miss, and it would have been nice to have that extra hour. We could have played a lot of really interesting stuff from the past years. And, Bubba, thank you for preparing those, but I don't think we're going to have time to get to them. So you just have to go, folks, to the archive. And
always worth the trip.
Here we go again.
Always worth the trip.
Always worth the trip. And to the annual program listings, you'll find play buttons in there beneath the date and the program number. Hit those. You'll download MP3s or listen to them online. There's some great stuff there. It really is. I wish there was just more time. That's one of the things that I've had a problem with, is having the time to go back to those cassettes and in real time transfer them.
You know, yeah, there's no high speed.
These days now, you know, I come in here with a 1 gigabyte thumb drive.
Right.
A little USB drive. Plugs into one of the computers in the control room. The show's over. File dump. Good night, Julian. Thank you. I go home, plug it into my machine, and it's there, you know. From the old days, I've got almost 1,000 cassettes sitting. Wow. Waiting to be digitized. And this, you know, not in my lifetime.
It's going
to
be a long, long wait.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They'll be landing before that.
We can but hope.
Did we get Michelle back, Julian? We did. Okay, Michelle, good evening.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, good evening, Michelle.
Michelle up there in Sudbury.
Happy 400.
Thank you, sir.
And hopefully another 400.
Well, another 4,000, you know, would be
modest.
Well, yeah,
why not? We're on a roll anyways.
Go for the gusto, you know? And then when I'm not here, I don't know, Woodsy or Frelott or Wayne St. John, Scott Robbins even down there with his long-distance all-you-can-eat phone plan.
Floated it.
Wow. Making technology work for you.
Yes. So what's happening, Michelle?
Actually, I heard of a sighting that took place in the Sioux. I believe it was Sioux, Michigan. I was in Quebec at that time, but on the 3rd or the 2nd of July, there was apparently a sighting seen by at least 3 reputable witnesses. So I imagine, it was aired on CTV from what I heard.
Oh, really?
I called Sioux, Ontario CTV, and they never called back. Then after that I found out it was in Sioux, Michigan, and it was a daytime sighting, late afternoon, I think. I'm not sure because I have no details at all. And
I think if you go to the UFO Updates email list, Stuart Miller sent me a lead, and I grabbed the story and posted it. It happened, I think, in the early part of this week.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from that, nothing else, except I wanted to mention to Mike Woods that regarding the license plates on cars, I actually scooped them. If you remember, Errol, we mentioned that last September, but I never got to tell him that I actually have the UFO Man license plates.
UFO Man.
Oh, you have UFO Man, yeah. For some reason around my household, and it's where it started from, my wife always referred to me as the UFO guy. So that's what I ended up with.
Yeah.
Well, I thought maybe the plates, I'd taken the plates before anybody else or something like that. It just turns out No?
Nope. No, that's, for some reason that was my label around the house. Yeah. Well, that's the one I can say on air anyway.
Yeah. Well, at least you got a car to put yours on. My plates are still in the bottom of my closet. I'm waiting to get a second vehicle. This time I'm buying used.
But, you know, you save so much gas leaving the plates in there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Well, anyways, I don't want to keep too much
time. I heard Lemberg laughing in the background, so he's joined the queue as well. So. So thanks for your call, Michelle.
Oh, anytime, and a good pat on the back for you.
Thank you,
and,
sir.
You guys take care, and hope to see you guys soon. I've got 2 more weeks of holidays coming up, and I don't know exactly what I want to do with them. But
well, you just have to head down here and stay
exactly.
in town.
Exactly. I want to spend more time with you guys. Last call.
So. Take care, Michelle.
Bonsoir, Michel. À la prochaine.
Salut, John.
Salut.
Bye.
Hey, up there in Sudbury, Ontario, that's...
Wow, bilingual and everything.
Bailang, man. Barry,
around the world, multilingual.
Yes.
What a show.
Oh, yeah. Let's bring Lemberg in here and add another language. Alfred Lemberg is down there in Alabama. Good evening, Alfred.
Guten Tag, mein Herr.
So have you been enjoying yourself this eve?
I have indeed, very much so, and let me say good afternoon and good evening and good morning to all my compatriots and dog brothers there in the control room. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and Errol, if I may, I want to offer you congratulations, of course, on what may prove to be the largest repository of ufological effulgency in existence, perhaps on the planet. If I may go on, just briefly there, when you consider the updates list with thousands of messages of ufological history, when you take into account the archives, both extant and potential, when you take into account Wendy Connors and her oral ufological history, it is quite an accomplishment, and I think commendation is just well-deserved on the 400th effort of it.
You know, Alfred, not only am I going to agree with you, I'm also going to point out that one of the key things about the materials, archives, what have you, associated with UFO updates is the fact that it doesn't come across with an agenda or a bias other than a bias to get the information out. And that's what I enjoy about it, personally. I get to read it and then make up my own little mind.
Well, I think it's certainly hewing closer to a central, centrist type of course, for sure. And, I mean, that's why I'm pleased and proud and grateful of my association with it at all.
Ooh. Mm. Yeah, well, that's...
Errol, now the shoe's on the other foot, but as I said earlier, every now and then... We've got to take the time to say well done to the people who are making contributions. And so this time, this is Alfred saying to you properly, well done, Errol.
Oh, is that what mm-hmm. you said?
Yes, I have southeastern Alabama standing at attention and saluting you at this time.
As well it should.
Bowing in my general direction is what you're saying.
Yes, saying they are not worthy. They are not worthy. Yes,
And now if we can get a full 26-pack salute, you know, cracking open of the beer cans, I think we'll be just perfect.
Okay. Well, that's mere moments away now is where that is. Tick, 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 tick. Alfred Lemberg, stay where you are. Scott Robbins down there in Puerto Vallarta, I know you're staying where you are because we haven't seen hide and hair of you for a year or so, and some of us will not be making it to Tombstone this year.
It will be an event. Hopefully we'll get a flyby.
Yeah, well, send lots of pictures. Just looking at email that's coming in here, Wendy Connors says need a couple of straight shots of my favorite Seagram's VO. It'll cure your voice for sure. Because all of this technology now, like Scott Robbins down there in Puerto Vallarta, Alfred Lemberg is sitting down there in southeastern Alabama, and everybody else who's been on tonight, they listen online, and then they keep up with everything, and they come in, and they do their bit, and they go back to listening online and sending email. You got to love this technology, don't you?
I don't know about that, but I think I like that Cure for a Bad Voice.
Yeah, well, that's...
Little Seagram's VO? That works for me.
Well, I'll get an opportunity to try it in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We shall. It's something worth celebrating tonight. And we wish that you all could join us tonight, no matter where you're listening. We were with Alfred Lemberg, and Alfred usually comments, has at least one or two comments about what's gone on in the program in the past. But I want to say to you, Alfred Lemberg, and to all of our contributors and all of you guys here in the studio, it's a pleasure working with you all. I mean, I know we get a little off topic sometimes and sometimes we get silly, but hell, what else is there to do on a Saturday night except talk UFOs and get a little silly on the radio? And it's a blast doing what I've been doing for the last 400 programs and coming up for the start of the ninth year, the end of October. It's really a pleasure and an honor to work with you guys who really, you know, none of us have any professional training in doing the work that's being done in the field. And yet somehow the work gets done, not just all of this collective, but all of the various people out there, some of whom have never made it on this program, but many of whom who have. And I'm full of admiration for the years and years of just dedication, despite the frustration and the stonewalling that has gone on over the last 50, 60 years. It's pretty...
Daryl, on that note, I would myself like to say congratulations to you, and it's a thrill to be with you here this evening. And I just want to take you back quickly to, you know, all those years ago when we were huddled in your apartment there in Toronto, putting the concept together and putting this thing moving it forward. And our idea at the time was not to come up with answers or conclusions, but it was to facilitate a discussion, facilitate an airing, literally, of people's thoughts and experiences so that others could listen and think for themselves, which is really what Mike was just saying in terms of, you know, I get to go here and read and make up my own mind. And that's what you've done, and you've been consistent with that for, you know, 400 shows. And to stay consistent and do that for that long and not become jaded and not become opinionated and not take a position yourself speaks volumes of you, of course. And I just wanted to say there seems to be a bit of a theme here tonight. Your quick little interview there off the top of the hour about accountability or lack thereof, and then our friend from New Mexico and the pilot who basically landed and found that nobody cared, and then the story off the top of the news here on this station about the Canadarm and the Discovery now being declared safe for use as a working platform, and how many years has that arm been in space? You know, it's amazing to me still to this day that the people who should and do have the know-how to know some answers don't seem to care to know or want to know, or maybe they've been told not to know.
Amen.
You know, 1969, almost 40 years ago, we were walking on the moon, and now we've reverted to, you know, piddling around in orbit on a Discovery ship that's watching bees copulate in space. You know, I mean, where have we gone, and why haven't we gone, and who's holding us back, and who's stopping us from moving forward? Stephen Hawking just said a couple of weeks ago, we must colonize space. And I think we know how, but for some reason someone's saying, no, we can't, or someone's told us, no, we can't.
And the thing there is that my favorite line from a film called Armageddon is Stephen Hawking says humanity has to colonize space. And I think of the line from Armageddon. Stephen Hawking is about the smartest man on the planet. You might want to listen to what he has to say. Just that simple.
It just amazes me that, you know, there are answers out there, but they're not getting out. And you wonder who's holding what back and why and who's been told to stifle, to use Archie's grand word.
It's kind of disappointing, Scott, when you think about it. From 69 to today, we've gone from walking on the moon to moonwalking in a ship that can go 200 miles up and no further.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Mm-hmm.
That's not progress.
No. And I must believe the technology, the know-how is there. For some reason, we've stalled or turned back on our tracks. There's a great little bit of discussion necessary there in terms of why.
Absolutely, and I'm sure Alfred Lemberg will be very happy to contribute his dime's worth.
I'm perfectly satisfied to sit here and listen to some real wisdom being forced deep into the heartland of America and all the way up and down the eastern seaboard of the United States.
One of the other things that we've also done as well is we've turned around. We've gone from having driven on the moon to sending basically remote-controlled buggies to Mars.
Yeah, but I'm okay with those. I'm sorry. The Mars rovers are my heroes. Yeah. You know, hey, we're going up for a three-month mission. 3 years later, oh, let's see what's over this hill. Man, that's work. Somebody did some real good work there. You know?
Humankind at its absolute best.
Gentlemen on the phone, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight. It's been a blast, and it's especially a blast the way that Scott Robbins picked up on the fact that his number was on the call sheet tonight, and we were going to surprise you and call you and say, hey, how come you're not on the 400th program? And he dialed in himself down there from Puerto Vallarta. He suddenly occurred to him that we might be on the radio tonight. You didn't know it was the 400th.
Scott's theme music should be Synchronicity by the Police.
Mm-hmm. I think it was watching E.T. Call Home.
Yeah. Scott, thank you. Alfred Lemberg, thank you. We will talk together on off the radio very soon. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Good night. You guys.
Crazy.
You gotta love him. And very quickly, I want to bring in Eric here. Eric, are you still there?
Hi. Yes, I am. There's a bit of static.
Don't worry about it. We'll sort it out while you talk.
Well, okay then. So happy 400th episode. Happy anniversary.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah. And as I am in Montreal, I just want to know. Chinois, Schwartz's, or the Maine for the smoked meat sandwich?
Schwartz's.
Oh, what? Is that a question?
What? What kind of question is that, Eric?
All right, then.
And what I wouldn't give for one of those right now.
Yes, you and me both.
Well, I'll bring another one then.
Six,
and
white
or rye mustard, how can I take your order?
You just nailed it.
Rye and mustard. It's perfect.
Great.
Good night, Eric. We'll see you back in Toronto soon.
Good night. Absolutely.
Good night. Wayne St. John. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Errol.
Dave Ferlot, thank you for all the years. And
thank
I look
you.
Forward to many more of them. And Mike Woods, I love the intermittency of your relationship with this program. And the Rovers are still working there.
They're still working fine.
Yeah. Thank you to Jim Pacheco for all the years that you've put in, to Julian McNabb, all the people that have worked on this program in the past. We look forward to starting 401 next Saturday night. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is...